In Johannesburg today, delegates to the UN Conference on Sustainable Development got specific. Conference organizers asked participants to focus on the root causes for the disparity between rich and poor nations. Many took aim at agriculture, and especially the way the U.S. and Europe subsidize their own farmers. Those subsidies keep world commodity prices below where they might otherwise be. One speaker, India's Vandana Shiva of the International Forum on Globalization, said today that subsidies shield Western businesses from fair competition and squeeze out farmers in developing countries.
The reason business is not asking for removal of distorting agricultural subsidies is because they are the primary beneficiaries of it. They are the beneficiaries of it at the level of inputs for seeds, for fertilizers, for chemicals, because non-sustainable agriculture would not be possible without that subsidy. And I think the first thing we need is a withdrawal of those subsidies to move to sustainable farming.
In some countries, any kind of farming is getting very difficult because the land is exhausted. In Haiti, for example, peasants have cut down almost all the country's trees, converting a once tropical paradise into a brown and parched wasteland. The wood is used principally as fuel, converted into charcoal for cooking. The government is doing little to save what few trees remain, and unchecked topsoil is flowing into the ocean, crippling agriculture. NPR's Jerry Haddon reports from Port-au-Prince.
The mountain's bones are showing, Haitians say, referring to their barren, moon-like landscape. In the tiny mountain village of Guojon, an hour outside the capital, Port-au-Prince, 27-year-old resident Jacques Talis remembers when the forest here was so thick he was afraid to walk beneath its shadowy canopies.
When I was little, there was a very dark place just down below. One day, I was returning home through those mango trees with a case of rice on my head. Suddenly, I heard this boom-boom sound, and I just took off running. And when I got home, I found the case on my head was filled with fallen mangoes.
Today, only a few trees outline the tired fields of corn and sorghum here. Nationally, less than 2% of Haiti remains forested, down from 40% just decades ago. Gabriel Nicolas is the Director General of Haiti's Ministry for the Environment.
We are witnessing a savage exploitation of what is left of our forest. The government doesn't have enough manpower, enough money also, to control these areas. They're cutting woods, and we don't know where it will end.
The problem begins with the need to cook. Haiti's long-shattered economy cannot provide electricity and gas to its mostly rural population, so folk in the countryside depend on charcoal to heat their beans and boil their rice. If that means cutting down even young fruit trees, so be it. There are some private alternative fuel initiatives underway here. Cuba has sold about 7,000 clean-burning kerosene stoves in Haiti. The device is simple to use and cheaper than charcoal. But 5 years into its promotion, the stove hasn't really caught on. The government blames that on resistance from the big money mafias that control the multi-million-dollar charcoal trade. Along the Jeremy Wharf in Port-au-Prince, ships arrive on the hour, laden with gray bags of charcoal from the country's few remaining forests. The dusty pier is packed with people hauling their bulging loads on rickety wooden carts. Charcoal wholesaler Madame Alphonse Adlen sits in the shadow cast by a mountain of charcoal, a refuge from the brutal midday sun.
We all know chopping down the trees is a problem, but it's all we have. The state should find us other things to do instead of this.
The World Bank once had a multi-million-dollar reforestation program underway in Haiti, but government officials say it fell apart in a dispute over who would control it. Now, as Haiti's last remaining trees fall, a few non-government organizations struggle to replant in the country's most ravaged regions. In the Artibonite Valley, hours north of Port-au-Prince, Jean Lamé Assor digs a hole and places a tiny green sapling in the earth. Assor works for a Mennonite NGO, distributing some 400,000 saplings each year. He says about half the trees survive, and slowly this region is becoming green again.
Au niveau national, no.
On a national level, he says, we can't do anything, but we can influence the region here. We are impacting this area. We know we can do that. But efforts here and elsewhere have created just a tiny peppering of green patches in what is rapidly becoming a Caribbean desert. and all the while, Haiti's silt-filled rivers carry to the sea some 36 million metric tons of topsoil per year. When this soil arrives at the ocean, it will disappear beneath the ships carrying the very trees that once held the soil in place, trees now for sale as charcoal. Buying that charcoal are all the frustrated country farmers who've descended to the city to find work, causing urban overcrowding. Environment Director General Nicolas says he's just trained 500 environmental agents to patrol the countryside, hoping to break this cycle of degradation. But he says it's a small gesture by a government that lacks the political will to bring the forests back.
And the odds are very high that we will fail. But I'm here hoping that someday, somehow, a leader will understand that Haiti cannot be Haiti without an environment.
As Haiti loses its environment, it depends increasingly on foreign food, which it can't afford, making Haitian President Jean-Bertrand Aristide's campaign promise, peace in the mind, peace in the belly, difficult to keep. Jerry Haddon, NPR News, Port-au-Prince, Haiti.